to make me suitable. Bathing me, styling me, painting me into the silly thing I'm supposed to be. The makeup is the worst, especially the thick white paste applied to my skin. They go through 3 pots of it, covering my face, neck, collarbone, and arms with a glittery wet powder. In the mirror, it looks like the warmth is leached from me, as if the powder has covered the heat in my skin. With a gasp, I realize it's supposed to hide my natural flush, the red bloom in my skin, the red blood. I'm pretending to be silver. And when they finish painting my face, I actually look the part. With my newly pale skin and darkened eyes and lips, I look cold, cruel, a living razor. I look silver. I look beautiful. And I hate it. How long will this last? Betrothed to a prince. Even in my head, it sounds crazy. Because it is. No silver in their right mind would marry you, let alone a prince of Norta. Not to calm rebellion, not to hide your identity, not for anything. Then why do this? When the maids pinch and pull me into a gown, I feel like a corpse being dressed for her funeral. I know it's not far from the truth. Red girls do not marry silver princes. I will never wear a crown or sit on a throne. Something will happen. An accident, maybe. A lie will raise me up, and one day another lie will bring me down. The dress is a dark shade of purple, spattered with silver, made of silk and sheer lace. All houses have a color, I remember, thinking back to the rainbow of families. The colors of Titanos, my name, must be purple and silver. When one of the maids reaches for my earrings, trying to take away the last bit of my old life, a surge of fear pulses through me. Don't touch them! The girl jumps back, blinking quickly, and the others freeze at my outburst. Sorry, I... Silver wouldn't apologize. I clear my throat, collecting myself. Leave the earrings. My voice sounds strong, hard, regal. You can change everything else, but leave the earrings. The 3 cheap pieces of metal, each one a brother, aren't going anywhere. The color suits you. I whirl around to see the maids stooped in identical bows, and standing over them, Cal. Suddenly, I'm very glad the makeup covers the blush spreading over me. He gestures quickly, his hand moving in a brushing motion, and the maids scurry from the room like mice fleeing from a cat. Sort of new to this royal thing, but I'm not sure you're supposed to be here, in my room, I say, forcing as much disdain into my voice as I can muster. After all, it's his fault I'm in this forsaken mess. He takes a few steps toward me, and on instinct I take a step back. My feet catch on the hem of my dress, making me choose between not moving or falling over. I don't know which is less desirable. I came to apologize, something I can't really do with an audience. He stops short, noting my discomfort. A muscle twitches in his cheek as he looks me over, probably remembering the hopeless girl who tried to pickpocket him only last night. I look nothing like her now. I'm sorry for getting you into this, Mare. Marina. The name even tastes wrong. That's my name, remember? Then it's a good thing Mare is a suitable nickname. I don't think anything about me is suitable. Cal's eyes rake over me and my skin burns under his gaze. How do you like Lucas? He finally says, taking an obliging step back. The Samos guard, the first decent silver I've met here. He's all right, I suppose. Perhaps the queen will take him away if I reveal how gentle the officer was to me. Lucas is a good man. His family thinks him weak for his kindness, he adds, eyes darkening a little, as if he knows the feeling. But he'll serve you well, and fairly. I'll make sure of it. How thoughtful. He's given me a kind jailer. But I bite my tongue. It won't do any good to snap at his mercy. Thank you, Your Highness. The spark returns to his eyes, and a smirk to his lips. You know my name is Cal. And you know my name, don't you? I tell him bitterly. You know what I come from. He barely nods, as if ashamed. You have to take care of them. My family. Their faces swim before my eyes, already so far away. All of them, for as long as you can. Of course I will. He takes a step toward me, closing the gap between us. I'm sorry, he says again. The words resound in my head, echoing off a memory. The wall of fire, the choking smoke. I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. It was Cal who caught me earlier, who kept me from escaping this awful place. Are you sorry for stopping my one chance of escape? You mean if you got past the sentinels, security, the walls, the woods, back to your village to wait until the queen herself hunted you down? He replies, taking my accusations in stride. Stopping you was the best thing for you and your family. I could have gotten away. You don't know me. I know the queen would tear the world apart, looking for the little lightning girl. Don't call me that. The nickname stings more than the fake name I'm still getting used to. Little lightning girl, that's what your mother calls me. He laughs bitterly. She's not my mother. She's Maven's, not mine. Just by the set of his jaw, I know not to press the issue. Oh, is all I can say, my voice very small. It fades quickly, a faint echo against the vaulted ceiling. I crane my neck, looking around at my new room for the first time since I came in. It's finer than anything I've ever seen. Marble and glass, silk and feathers. The light has changed, shifting to the orange color of dusk. Night is coming, and with it, the rest of my life. I woke up this morning as one person. I mutter more to myself than to him. And now I'm supposed to be someone else entirely. You can do this. I feel him take a step toward me, his heat filling the room in a way that makes my skin prickle. But I don't look up. I won't. How do you know? Because you must. He bites his lip, eyes shifting over me. As beautiful as this world is, it's just as dangerous. People who are not useful, people who make mistakes, they can be removed. You can be removed. And I will be, someday. But that is not the only threat I face. So, the moment I mess up could be my last? He doesn't speak, but I can see the answer in his eyes. Yes. My fingers fiddle with the silver belt at my waist, pulling it tight. If this was a dream, I would wake up. But I don't. This is really happening. What about me? About... I hold out my hands, glaring at the infernal things. This. In response, Cal smiles. I think you'll get the hang of it. Then he holds up his own bare hand. Strange contraption at his wrist. Something like a bracelet with two metal ends, clicks, producing sparks. Instead of disappearing in a flash, the sparks glow and burst into red flame, giving off a blast of heat. He's a burner. He controls heat and fire. I remember, he's a prince and a dangerous one at that. But the flame disappears as quickly as it came, leaving only Cal's encouraging smile and the humming of cameras hidden somewhere, watching over everything. The masked sentinels on the edge of my vision are a constant reminder of my new position. I'm nearly a princess, engaged to the second most eligible bachelor in the country. And I'm a lie. Cal is long gone, leaving me with my guards. Lucas isn't so bad, but the others are stern and quiet, never looking me in the eye. The guards and even Lucas are wardens to keep me imprisoned in my own skin, red behind a silver curtain that can never be pulled away. If I fall, if I even slip, I will die, and others will die for my failure. As they escort me toward the feast, I go over the story the queen drilled into me, the pretty tale she was going to tell the court. It's simple, easy to remember, but it still makes me cringe. I was born at the war front. My parents were killed in an attack on the camp. A red soldier saved me from the rubble and brought me home to a wife who always wanted a daughter. They raised me in the village called the Stilts, and I was ignorant of my birthright or my ability until this morning, and now I am returned to my rightful place. The thought makes me sick. My rightful place is at home, with my parents and Gisa and Kalorn, not here. The sentinels lead the way through the maze of passages in the upper levels of the palace. Like the spiral garden, the architecture is all curves of stone, glass, and metal, slowly turning downward. Diamond glasses around every corner, showing breathtaking views of the marketplace, the river valley, and the woods beyond. From this height, I can see hills I didn't know existed rising in the distance, silhouetted against the setting sun. "The last two floors are royal apartments," Lucas says, pointing up the sloping, spiraling hallway. Sunlight glitters like a firestorm, throwing speckles of light down on us. "The lift will take us down to the ballroom, just here." Lucas reaches out, stopping next to a metal wall. It reflects us dully, then slides away when he waves a hand. The sentinels usher us into a box with no windows and harsh lighting. I force myself to breathe, even though I'd rather push out of what feels like a giant metal coffin. I jump a mile when the lift suddenly moves, making my pulse race. My breath comes in short gasps as I look around in wide-eyed fright, expecting to see the others reacting in the same way, but no one else seems to mind the fact that the box we're in is dropping. Only Lucas notices my discomfort, and he slows our descent a little. The lift moves up and down so we don't have to walk.
"This place is very big, Lady Titanos," he murmurs with the ghost of a smile.
I'm torn between wonder and fear as we drop, and I breathe a sigh of relief when Lucas opens the lift doors. We march out into the mirrored hall I ran through this morning. The broken mirrors are already fixed. It looks like nothing ever happened. When Queen Alara appears around the corner, her own sentinels in tow, Lucas sweeps into a bow. Now she wears black and red and silver, her husband's colors. With her blonde hair and pale skin, she looks downright ghoulish. She grabs me by the arm, pulling me to her as we walk. Her lips don't move, but I hear her voice all the same, echoing in my head. This time it doesn't hurt or make me nauseous, but the sensation still feels sick and wrong. I want to scream, to claw her out of my head, but there's nothing I can do except hate her. "The Titanos family were Oblivians," she says, her voice all around. "They could explode things with a touch, like the Larilyn girl did at Queen's Trial." When I try to remember the girl, Ilara projects an image of her directly into my brain. It flashes, barely there, but still I see a young girl in orange blow up rock and sand like military bombs. "Your mother, Nora Knoll, was a storm like the rest of House Knoll. Storms control the weather to an extent. It's not common, but their union resulted in your unique abilities to control electricity. Say no more if anyone asks." What do you really want with me? Even in my head, my voice quivers. Her laughter bounces inside my skull, the only answer I'll get. "Remember the person you're supposed to be, and remember well," she continues, ignoring my question. "You are pretending to be raised red, but you're silver by blood. You are now red in the head, silver in the heart." A shiver of fear shoots through me. "From now until the end of your days, you must lie. Your life depends on it, little lightning girl." 10. Ilara leaves me standing in the hallway, mulling over her words. I used to think there was only the divide, silver and red, rich and poor, kings and slaves. But there's much more in between. Things I don't understand, and I'm right in the middle of it. I grew up wondering if I'd have food for supper. Now I'm standing in a palace, about to be eaten alive. Red in the head, silver in the heart, sticks with me, guiding my motions. My eyes stay wide,
taking in the grand palace both Mare and Marina had never dreamed of. But my mouth presses into a firm line. Marina is impressed, but she keeps her emotions in check. She is cold and unfeeling. The doors at the end of the hall open, revealing the biggest room I've ever seen. Bigger even than the throne room. I don't think I'll ever get used to the sheer size of this place. I step through the doors onto a landing. Stairs lead down to the floor, where every house sits in cool expectation, their eyes forward. Again, they keep to their colors. A few mutter among themselves, probably talking about me and my little show. King Tiberius and Alara stand on a raised surface a few feet higher than the floor, facing the crowd of their subjects. They never miss an opportunity to lord over the others. Either they're very vain or very aware. To look powerful is to be powerful. The princes match their parents in different outfits of red and black, both decorated with military medals. Cal stands to his father's right, his face still and impassive. If he knows who he's going to marry, he doesn't look happy about it. Maven's there, too, on his mother's left, his face a storm cloud of emotions. The younger brother is not as good as Cal at hiding his feelings. At least I won't have to deal with a good liar.
The rite of Queen's Trial is always a joyous event, representing the future of our great kingdom and the bonds that keep us strongly united in the face of our enemies, the king says, addressing the crowd. They don't see me yet, standing on the edge of the room, looking down on them all. But as you saw today, Queen's Trial has brought forth more than just the future queen.
He turns to Alara, who clasps the king's hand in her own with a dutiful smile. Her shift from devilish villain to blushing queen is astounding.
We all remember our bright hope against the darkness of war, our captain, our friend, the General Ethan Titanos, Alara says.
People murmur over the room, in fondness or sadness. Even the Samos patriarch, Evangeline's cruel father, bows his head.
He led the Iron Legion to victory, pushing back the lines of war that had stood for nearly 100 years. The Lakelanders feared him. Our soldiers loved him.
I strongly doubt a single red soldier loved their silver general.
Lakelander's spies killed our beloved friend Ethan, sneaking across the lines to destroy our one hope for peace. His wife, the Lady Nora, a good and just woman, died with him. On that fateful day, 16 years ago, House Titanos was lost. Friends were taken from us. Our blood was spilled.
Silence settles on the room as the queen pauses to dab at her eyes, wiping away what I know are fake, forced tears. A few of the girls, participants in Queen's Trial, fidget in their seats. They don't care about a dead general, and neither does the queen. Not really. This is about me. About somehow slipping a red girl into a crown without anyone noticing. It's a magic trick, and the queen is a skilled magician. Her eyes find me, blazing up to my spot at the top of the stairs, and everyone follows her gaze. Some look confused, while others recognize me from this morning, and a few stare at my dress. They know the colors of House Titanos better than I do, and understand who I am, or at least who I'm pretending to be.
This morning, we saw a miracle. We watched a red girl fall into the arena like a bolt of lightning, wielding power she should not have.
More murmurs rise, and a few silvers even stand. The Samos girl looks furious, her black eyes fixed on me.
The king and I interviewed the girl extensively, trying to discover how she came to be.
Interview is a funny way to describe scrambling my brain.
She isn't red, but she is still a miracle. My friends, Please welcome back to us Lady Marina Titanos, daughter of Ethan Titanos, lost and now found. With a twitch of her hand, she beckons me closer. I obey. I descend the stairs to stilted applause, more focused on not tripping. But my feet are sure, my face still, as I plunge toward hundreds of faces, wondering, staring, suspecting. Lucas and my guards don't follow, staying on the landing. I'm alone in front of these people once again, and I've never felt so bare, even with the layers of silk and powder. Again, I'm grateful for all the makeup. It's my shield, between them and the truth of who I am, a truth I don't even understand. The queen gestures to an open seat in the front row of the crowd, and I make my way to it. The Queen's Trial girls watch me, wondering why I'm here and why I'm so important all of a sudden. But they're only curious, not angry. They look at me with pity, empathizing as best they can with my sad story. Except Evangeline Samos. When I finally get to my seat, she's sitting right next to it, her eyes glaring into mine. Gone are her leather clothes and iron studs. Now she wears a dress of interlocked metal rings. From the way her fingers tighten, I can tell she wants nothing more than to wrap her hands around my throat.
Saved from her parents' fate, Lady Marina was taken from the front and brought to a red village not 10 miles from here, the king continues, taking over so he can tell the grand twist in my tale. Raised by red parents, she worked as a red servant, and until this morning, she believed she was one of them.
The accompanying gasp makes my teeth grind.
Marina was a diamond in the rough, working in my own palace, the daughter of my late friend, under my nose. But no more. To atone for my ignorance, and to repay her father and her house for their great contributions to the kingdom, I would like to take this moment to announce the joining of House Kalor and the resurrected House Titanos.
Another gasp, this one from the girls of Queen's Trial. They think I'm taking Cal away from them. They think I'm their competition. I raise my eyes to the king, quietly pleading for him to continue before one of the girls murders me. I can almost feel Evangeline's cold metal cutting into me, her fingers laced together tightly, knuckles white as she resists the urge to skin me in front of everyone. On her other side, her brooding father puts a hand on her arm to still her. When Maven steps forward, the tension in the room deflates. He stutters briefly, tripping over the words he's been taught, but he finds his voice. Lady Marina! Trying my best not to shake, I rise to my feet and face him. In the eyes of my royal father and the noble court, I would ask for your hand in marriage. I pledge myself to you, Marina Titanos. Will you accept? My heart pounds as he speaks. Though his words sound like a question, I know I have no choice in my answer. No matter how much I want to look away, my eyes stay on Maven. He gives me the smallest of encouraging smiles. I wonder to myself which girl would have been chosen for him. Who would I have chosen? If none of this had happened, if Killorn's master never died, if Geese's hand was never broken, if nothing ever changed, if... It's the worst word in the world. Conscription. Survival. Green-eyed children with my quick feet and Killorn's last name. That future was almost impossible before. Now it's non-existent.
I pledge myself to you, Maven Kalor, I say, hammering the last nails into my coffin. My voice quivers, but I don't stop. I accept.
It carries such finality, slamming a door on the rest of my life. I feel like collapsing, but somehow manage to sit back down gracefully. Maven slinks back to his seat, grateful to be out of the spotlight. His mother pats him on the arm in reassurance. She smiles softly, just for him. Even Silvers love their children. But she turns cold again as Cal stands, her smile disappearing in a heartbeat.
The air seems to go out of the room as every girl inhales, waiting for his decision. I doubt Cal had any say in choosing a queen, but he plays his part well, just like Maven, just like I'm trying to do. He smiles brightly, flashing even white teeth that make a few girls sigh, but his warm eyes are terribly solemn. I am my father's heir, born to privilege and power and strength. You owe me your allegiance, just as I owe you my life. It is my duty to serve you and my kingdom as best I can, and beyond. He's rehearsed his speech, but the fervor Cal has can't be faked. He believes in himself, that he'll be a good king or die trying. I need a queen who will sacrifice just as much as I will, to maintain order, justice, and balance. The Queen's Trial girls lean forward, eager to hear his next words, but Evangeline doesn't move, an obscene smirk twisting her face. House Samos looks equally calm. Her brother, Ptolemus, even stifles a yawn. They know who has been chosen. Lady Evangeline! There's no gasp of surprise, no shock or excitement from her. Even the other girls, heartbroken as they are, sit back with only dejected shrugs. Everyone saw this coming. I remember the Fat family back in the Spiral Garden, complaining that Evangeline Samos had already won. They were right. With a fluid, cold grace, Evangeline rises to her feet. She barely looks at Cal, instead turning over her shoulder to sneer at the crestfallen girls. She basks in her moment of glory. A smile ghosts over her face when her eyes fall on me. I don't miss the feral flash of teeth. When she turns back around, Cal echoes his brother's proposal. In the eyes of my royal father and the noble court, I would ask for your hand in marriage. I pledge myself to you, Evangeline Samos. Will you accept?
I pledge myself to you, Prince Tiberius, she says in a voice that is oddly high and breathy, contrasting with her hard appearance. I accept.
With a triumphant smirk, Evangeline sits back down, and Cal retreats to his own seat. He keeps a smile fixed in place, like a piece of armor, but she doesn't seem to notice. Then I feel a hand find my arm, nails biting into my skin. I fight the urge to jump out of my chair. Evangeline doesn't react, still staring straight ahead at the place that will one day be hers. If this were the stilts, I'd knock a few of her teeth out. Her fingers dig into me, down to the flesh. If she draws blood, red blood, our little game will be over before it even has a chance to begin. But she stops short of breaking skin, leaving bruises the maids will have to hide.
Get in my way, and I'll kill you slowly, little lightning girl, she mutters through her smile.
Little lightning girl. The nickname is really starting to get on my nerves. To cement her point, the smooth metal bracelet on her wrist shifts, turning into a circle of sharp thorns. Each tip glistens, begging to spill blood. I swallow hard, trying not to move. But she lets go quickly, returning her hand to her lap. Once again, she's the picture of a demure silver girl. If there was ever a person begging for an elbow to the face, it is Evangeline Samos. A quick glance around the room tells me the court has turned sullen. Some girls have tears in their eyes and throw wolfish glares at Evangeline and even me. They probably waited for this day all their lives, only to fail. I want to hand my betrothal over, to give away what they so desperately want, but no, I must look happy, I must pretend. As wonderful and happy as today has been, King Tiberius says, ignoring the sentiment in the room. I must remind you why this choice has been made. The might of House Samos, joined with my son, and all his children to follow, will help guide our nation. You all know the precarious state of our kingdom, with war in the north and foolish extremists, enemies to our way of life,
attempting to destroy us from within. The Scarlet Guard might seem small and insignificant to us, but they represent a dangerous turn for our Red Brothers. More than a few people in the crowd scoff at the term brothers, myself included. Small and insignificant. Then why do they need me? Why use me if the Scarlet Guard is nothing to them? The king is a liar. But what he's trying to hide, I'm still not sure. It could be the guard's strength. It could be me. It's probably both. Should this rebellious streak take hold, he continues, it will end in bloodshed and a divided nation, something I cannot bear. We must maintain the balance. Evangeline and Marina will help do that, for the sake of us all. Murmurs go through the crowd at the king's words. Some nod, others look cross at the queen's trial choices. But no one voices their dissent. No one speaks up. No one would listen if they did. Smiling, King Tiberius bows his head. He is one, and he knows it. Strength and power, he repeats. The motto echoes out from him as every person says the words. The words trip over my tongue, feeling foreign in my mouth. Cal stares down at me, watching me chant along with all the others. In that moment, I hate myself. Strength and power. I suffer through the feast, watching but not seeing, hearing but not listening. Even the food, more food than I've ever seen, tastes plain in my mouth. I should be stuffing my face, enjoying what's probably the best meal of my life. But I can't. I can't even speak when Maven murmurs to me, his voice calm and level in assurance. You're doing fine, he says, but I try to ignore him. Like his brother, he wears the same metal bracelet, the Flame Maker. It's a firm reminder of exactly who and what Maven is. Powerful, dangerous, a burner, a silver. Sitting at a table made of crystal, drinking bubbly gold liquid until my head spins, I feel like a traitor. What are my parents eating for dinner tonight? Do they even know where I am? Or is Mom sitting on the porch, waiting for me to come home? Instead, I'm stuck in a room full of people who would kill me if they knew the truth. And the royals, of course, who would kill me if they could, who probably will kill me one day. They pulled me inside out, swapping mare for Marina, a thief for a crown, rags for silk, red for silver. This morning I was a servant. Tonight, I'm a princess. How much more will change? What else will I lose? That's enough of that, Maven says, his voice swimming through the din of the feast. He pulls away my fancy goblet, replacing it with a glass of water. I like that drink. But I gulp down the water greedily, feeling my head clear. Maven just shrugs. You'll thank me later. Thank you, I snap as snidely as possible. I haven't forgotten the way he looked at me this morning, like I was something on the bottom of his shoe. But now his gaze is softer, calmer, more like Cal's. I'm sorry about earlier today, Marina. My name is Mare. I'm sure you are, comes out instead. Really, he says, leaning toward me. We're seated side by side with the rest of the royals at the high table. It's just, usually younger princes get to choose. One of the few perks of not being the heir, he adds with a terribly forced smile. Oh. I didn't know that, I reply, not really knowing what to say. I should feel sorry for him, but I can't bring myself to feel any kind of pity for a prince. Yeah, well, you wouldn't. It's not your fault. He looks back to the feasting hall, casting his gaze out like a fishing line. I wonder what face he's looking for. Is she here? I murmur, trying to sound apologetic. The girl you would have chosen? He hesitates, then shakes his head. No, I didn't have anyone in mind, but it was nice to have the option of a choice, you know? No, I don't know. I don't have the luxury of choice. Not now, not ever. Not like my brother,
He grew up knowing he'd never have a say in his future. I guess now I'm getting a taste of what he feels.
You and your brother have everything, Prince Maven, I whisper in a voice so fervent it might be a prayer. You live in a palace, you have strength, you have power, you wouldn't know hardship if it kicked you in the teeth, and believe me, it does that a lot, so excuse me if I don't feel sorry for either of you.
There I go, letting my mouth run away with my brain. As I recover, drinking down the rest of the water in an attempt to cool my temper, Maven just stares at me, his eyes cold. But the wall of ice recedes, melting as his gaze softens. You're right, Mare. No one should feel sorry for me. I can hear the bitterness in his voice. With a shiver, I watch him throw a glance at Cal. His older brother beams like the sun, laughing with their father. When Maven turns back around, he forces another smile, but there's a surprising sadness in his eyes. As much as I try, I can't ignore the sudden jolt of pity I feel for the forgotten prince. But it passes when I remember who he is and who I am. I'm a red girl in a sea of silvers, and I can't afford to feel sorry for anyone, least of all the son of a snake. 11. The crowd toasts at the end of the feast, their glasses raised to the royal table. On they go, lords and ladies in a rainbow of color trying to wiggle their way into favor. I'll have to learn them all soon, matching color to house and house to people. Maven whispers their names to me in turn, even though I won't remember them tomorrow. At first it's annoying, but soon I find myself leaning in to hear the names. Lord Samos is the last to stand, and when he does, a hush falls. This man commands respect, even among titans. Though his black robes are plain, trimmed with simple silk, and he has no great jewels or badges to speak of, he has the undeniable air of power. I don't need Maven to tell me he's the highest of the high houses, a person to be feared above all others. Volo Samos, Maven murmurs. Head of House Samos. He owns and operates the iron mines. Every gun in the war comes from his land. So he's not just a noble. His importance comes from more than just titles. Volo's toast is short and to the point.
To my daughter,
he rumbles, his voice low, steady, and strong.
The future queen.
To Evangeline,
Ptolemus shouts, jumping to his feet next to his father. His eyes blaze around the room, daring someone to oppose them. A few lords and ladies look annoyed, angry even, but they raise their cups with the rest, saluting the new princess. Their glasses reflect the light, each one a tiny star in the hand of a god. When he finishes, Queen Alara and King Tiberius rise, both of them smiling at their many guests. Cal gets up as well, then Evangeline, then Maven, and after one dumb moment, I join them. The many houses do the same at their tables, and the scraping of chairs on marble sounds like nails on a stone. Thankfully, the king and queen simply bow and walk down the short set of steps, leading away from our high table. It's over. I've made it through my first night. Cal takes Evangeline's hand and leads her after them, with Maven and me bringing up the rear. When Maven takes my hand, his skin is shockingly cold. The silvers press in on both sides, watching us pass in heavy silence. Their faces are curious, cunning, cruel. And behind every false smile is a reminder. They are watching. Every eye scraping over me, looking for cracks and imperfections, makes me squirm. But I cannot break. I cannot slip. Not now, not ever. I'm one of them. I'm special. I'm an accident. I'm a lie. And my life depends on maintaining the illusion. Maven tightens his fingers in mine, willing me onward. It's almost over, he whispers as we near the far end of the hall. Almost there. The feeling of being smothered passes as we leave the feast behind. But the cameras follow us with heavy electric eyes. The more I think about it, the stronger their gaze becomes, until I can sense where the cameras are before I see them.
Maybe this is a side effect of my condition. Maybe I've just never been surrounded by this much electricity before, and this is how everyone feels. Or maybe I'm just a freak. Back in the passageway, a group of sentinels waits to escort us upstairs. But then, what threats could there possibly be to these people? Cal, Maven, and King Tiberius can control fire. Ilara can control mines. What could they fear? We will rise, red as the dawn. Farley's voice, my brother's words, the creed of the Scarlet Guard, comes back to me. They attacked the capital already. This could even be their next target. I could be a target. Farley could hold me up in another hijacked broadcast, revealing me to the world in an attempt to undermine the Silvers. "Look at their lies! Look at this lie!" she would say, pushing my face into the camera, bleeding me red for all the world to see. Crazier and crazier thoughts come to mind, each one more frightening and outlandish than the last. This place is making me insane after just one day. "That went well," Ilara says, snatching her hand away from the king when we reach the residence floors. He doesn't seem to mind in the least. "Take the girls to their rooms." She doesn't direct her command at anyone in particular, but four sentinels break off from the group. Their eyes glitter behind their black masks. "I can do it," Cal and Maven say in unison. They glance at each other, startled. Ilara raises one perfect eyebrow. "That would be inappropriate." "I'll escort Marina. Maven can take Evangeline," Cal offers quickly. And Maven purses his lips at the nickname. Mavy, probably what Cal called him as a boy, and now it's stuck. The emblem of a younger brother, always in shadow, always second. The king shrugs. "Let them, Ilara. The girls need a good night of sleep, and sentinels would give any lady bad dreams." He chuckles, tossing a playful nod at the guards. They don't respond, silent as stone. I don't know if they're allowed to talk at all. After a moment of tense silence, the queen turns on her heel. "Very well." Like any wife, she hates her husband for challenging her, and like any queen, she hates the power the king holds over her. A bad combination. "To bed," the king says, his voice a bit more forceful and authoritative. The sentinels stay with him, following when he goes the opposite way from his wife. I guess they don't sleep in the same room, but that's not much of a shock.
"My room is where, exactly?" Evangeline asks, glaring at Maven.
The blushing queen-to-be is gone, replaced by the sharp she-devil I recognize. He gulps at the sight of her.
This way, miss, ma'am, my lady."
He holds out an arm to her, but she breezes right by him.
"Good night, Cal, Marina." Maven sighs, making a point of looking at me.
I can only nod at the retreating prince. My betrothed. The thought makes me want to be sick. Even though he seemed polite, nice even, he's silver, and he's Alara's son, which might be even worse. His smiles and kind words cannot hide that from me. Cal's just as bad, raised to rule to perpetuate this world of division even further. He watches Evangeline disappear, his eyes lingering on her retreating form in a way that makes me strangely annoyed. "You picked a real winner," I mutter once she's out of earshot. Cal's smile dies with a downward twitch, and he starts walking toward my room, ascending the sloping spiral. My little legs fight to keep up with his long strides, but he doesn't seem to notice, lost in thought. Finally, he turns, his eyes like hot coals. "I didn't pick anything. Everyone knows that. At least you knew this was coming. I woke up this morning and didn't even have a boyfriend." Cal winces at my words, but I don't care. I can't handle his self-pity. "And, you know, there's the you're going to be king thing. That must be a boost." He chuckles to himself, but he's not laughing. His eyes darken and he takes a step forward, surveying me from head to toe. Instead of looking judgmental, he seems sad, deeply sad in the red-gold pools of his eyes, a little boy lost, looking for someone to save him. "You're a lot like Maven," he says after a long moment that makes my heart race.
You mean engaged to a stranger? We do have that in common. You're both very smart. I can't help but snort. Cal obviously doesn't know I can't get through a 14-year-old's math test. You know people. You understand them. You see through them. I did a great job of that last night. I definitely knew you were the crown prince the whole time. I still can't believe it was only last night. What a difference a day makes. You knew I didn't belong. His sadness is contagious, sending an ache over me. So we've switched places. Suddenly, the palace doesn't seem so beautiful or so magnificent. The hard metal and stone is too severe, too bright, too unnatural, trapping me in.
And underneath it all, the electric buzz of cameras drones on.
It's not even a sound, but a feeling in my skin, in my bones, in my blood. My mind reaches out to the electricity, as if on instinct. Stop, I tell myself, stop. The hair stands up on my arm as something sizzles beneath my skin, a crackling energy I can't control. Of course it returns now when it's the last thing I want. But the feeling passes as quickly as it came, and the electricity shifts to a low hum again, letting the world return to normal. Are you okay? Cal stares down at me, confused. Sorry, I mumble, shaking my head. Just thinking. He nods, looking almost apologetic. About your family? The words hit me like a slap. They hadn't even crossed my mind in the last few hours, and it sickens me. A few hours of silk and royalty have already changed me.
I've sent a conscript release for your brothers and your friend, and an officer to your house to tell your parents where you are.
Cal continues, thinking this might calm me. We can't tell them everything, though. I can only imagine how that went. Oh, hello. Your daughter is a silver now, and she's going to marry a prince. You'll never see her again, but we'll send you some money to help out. Even trade, don't you think?
They know you work for us and have to live here, but they still think you're a servant, for now at least. When your life becomes more public, we'll figure out how to deal with them.
Can I write to them at least? Shade's letters were always a bright spot in our dark days. Maybe mine will be the same. But Cal shakes his head.
I'm sorry, that's just not possible.
I didn't think so. He ushers me into my room, which quickly sparkles to life. Motion-activated lights, I think. Like back in the hallway, my senses sharpen, and everything electrical becomes a burning feeling in my mind. Immediately, I know there are no less than 4 cameras in my room, and that makes me squirm.
It's for your own protection. If anyone were to intercept the letters, to find out about you,
are the cameras in here for my own protection? I ask, gesturing to the walls. The cameras stab into my skin, watching every inch of me. It's maddening, and after a day like today, I don't know how much more I can take. I'm locked in this nightmare palace, surrounded by walls and guards and people who will tear me to shreds, and I can't even get a moment's peace in my own room. Instead of snapping back at me, Cal looks bewildered. His eyes blaze around. The walls are bare, but he must be able to sense them too. How can anyone not feel the eyes pressing down?
Mayor, there aren't any cameras in here.
I wave a hand at him, dismissive. The electrical hum still breaks against my skin. Don't be stupid, I can feel them. Now he truly looks lost.
Feel them? What do you mean?
But the words die in my throat as I realize. He doesn't feel anything. He doesn't even know what I'm saying. How can I explain this to him if he doesn't already know? How can I tell him I feel the energy in the air like a pulse, like another part of me, like another sense? Would he even understand? Would anyone? Is that not normal? Something flickers in his eyes as he hesitates, trying to find the words to tell me I'm different. Even among the silvers, I'm something else.
Not to my knowledge, he finally says.
My voice sounds small, even to me. I don't think anything about me is normal anymore. He opens his mouth to speak, but thinks better of it. There's nothing he can say to make me feel better. There's nothing he can do for me at all. In the fairy tales, the poor girl smiles when she becomes a princess. Right now, I don't know if I'll ever smile again. 12. Your schedule is as follows. 0730, breakfast. 0800, protocol. 1130, luncheon. 1300, lessons. 1800, dinner. Lucas will escort you to all. Schedule is not negotiable. Her Royal Highness, Queen Ilara of House Mirandis. The note is short and to the point, not to mention rude. My mind swims at the thought of 5 hours of lessons, remembering how terrible I was at school. With a groan, I throw the note back down on the nightstand. It lands in a pool of golden morning light, just to tease me. Like yesterday, the three maids flutter in, quiet as a whisper. 15 minutes later, after suffering through tight leather leggings, a draping gown, and other strange, impractical clothes, we settle on the plainest thing I can find in the closet of wonders. Stretchy, but sturdy, black pants, a purple jacket with silver buttons, and polished gray boots. Besides the glossy hair and the war paint, I almost look like myself again. Lucas waits on the other side of the door, 1 foot tapping against the stone floor. 1 minute behind schedule, he says the second I step into the hall. Are you going to babysit me every day, or just until I learn my way around? He falls into step beside me, gently guiding me in the right direction. What do you think? Here's to a long and happy friendship, Officer Samos. Likewise, my lady. Don't call me that. Whatever you say, my lady. Next to last night's feast, breakfast looks dull in comparison. The smaller dining room is still large, with a high ceiling and a view of the river, but the long table is only set for 3. Unfortunately for me, the other two happen to be Ilara and Evangeline. They're already halfway through their bowls of fruit by the time I shuffle in. Ilara barely glances at me, but Evangeline's sharp-eyed stare is enough for both of them. With the sun bouncing off her metal getup, she looks like a blinding star. You should eat quickly, the queen says without looking up. Lady Blanos does not tolerate tardiness. Across from me, Evangeline laughs into her hand. You're still taking protocol? You mean you aren't? My heart leaps at the prospect of not having to sit through classes with her. Excellent! Evangeline scoffs at me, brushing off the insult. Only children take protocol. To my surprise, the queen takes my side. Lady Marina has grown up under terrible circumstances. She knows nothing of our ways, of the expectations she must fulfill now. Surely you understand her needs, Evangeline. The reprimand is calm, quiet, and threatening. Evangeline's smile drops, and she nods, not daring to meet the queen's eye. Luncheon today will be on the glass terrace, with the ladies of Queen's Trial and their mothers. Try not to gloat, Ilara adds, though I never would. Evangeline, on the other hand, blushes white. They're still here, I hear myself ask, even after not being chosen? Ilara nods. Our guests will be here for the coming weeks, to properly honor the prince and his betrothed. They won't leave until after the parting ball. My heart plummets in my chest until it bounces around my toes. So more nights like last night, with the pressing crowd and 1,000 eyes. They'll ask questions, too. Questions I'll have to answer. Lovely! And after the ball, we leave with them, Ilara continues, twisting the knife, to return to the capital. The capital. Archeon. I know the royal family goes back to Whitefire Palace at the end of every summer, and now I'm going too. I'll have to leave, and this world I can't understand will become my only reality. I'll never be able to go home. You knew this, I tell myself. You agreed to this. But it doesn't hurt any less. When I escape back into the hallway, Lucas ushers me down the passage, As we walk, he smirks at me. You have watermelon on your face.
Of course I do, I snap, wiping at my mouth with my sleeve.
Lady Blanos is just through here, he says, gesturing to the end of the hall.
What's the story about her? Can she fly or make flowers grow out of her ears?
Lucas cracks a smile, humoring me.
Not quite.
She's a healer. Now, there's two kinds of healers, skin healers and blood healers. All of House Blanos are blood healers, meaning they can heal themselves. I could throw her off the top of the hall and she'd walk away without a scratch.
I'd like to see that tested, but I don't say so out loud. I've never heard of a blood healer before.
You wouldn't have, since they're not allowed to fight in the arenas. There's simply no point in them doing it.
Wow!
Yet another silver of epic proportions.
So if I have, an episode...
Lucas softens, understanding what I'm trying to say. She'll be just fine. The curtains, on the other hand. That's why they gave her to me, because I'm dangerous. But Lucas shakes his head. Lady Titanos, they gave her to you because your posture is terrible and you eat like a dog. Bess Blanos is going to teach you how to be a lady, and if you light her up a couple of times, no one will blame you.
How to be a lady. This will be awful.
He raps his knuckles on the door, making me jump. It swings open on silent, smooth hinges, revealing a sunlit room. I'll be back to bring you to lunch, he says. I don't move, my feet planted, but Lucas nudges me into the dreaded room. The door swings behind me, this time shutting out the hall and anything that might calm me down. The room is fine, but plain, with a wall of windows, and totally empty. The buzzing of cameras, lights, electricity is vibrantly strong in here, almost burning the air around me with its energy. I'm sure the Queen is watching, ready to laugh at my attempts to be proper.
Hello? I say, expecting a response, but nothing comes. I cross to the windows, looking out on the courtyard. Instead of another pretty garden, I'm surprised to find this window doesn't face outside at all, but down into a gigantic white room. The floor is several stories below me, and a track rings the outer edge. In the center, a strange contraption moves and turns, spinning round and round with outstretched metal arms. Men and women, all in uniform, dodge the spinning machine. It picks up speed, twirling faster until only two remain. They're quick, dipping and dodging with grace and speed. At every turn, the machine accelerates until it finally slows, shutting down. They've beaten it. This must be some kind of training for security or sentinels. But when the two trainees move on to target practice, I realize they aren't security at all. The pair of them shoot bright red fireballs into the air, exploding targets as they rise and fall. Each one is a perfect shot, and even from up here, I recognize their smiling faces. Cal and Maven. So this is what they do during the day. Not learning to rule, to be a king, or even a proper lord, but to train for war. Cal and Maven are deadly creatures, soldiers. But their battle isn't just on the lines. It's here, in a palace, on the broadcasts, in the heart of every person they rule. They will rule, not just by right of a crown, but by might. Strength and power, it's all the Silvers respect. And it's all it takes to keep the rest of us slaves. Evangeline steps up next. When the targets fly, she throws out a fan of sharp silver metal darts to take down each one in turn. No wonder she laughed at me for protocol. While I'm in here learning how to eat properly, she's training to kill.
Enjoying the show, Lady Marina, a voice crows behind me.
I turn around, my nerves tingling a bit. What I see doesn't do anything to calm me. Lady Blanos is a horrifying sight, and it takes all of my manners to keep my jaw from dropping. Blood healer able to heal herself. I understand now what that means. She must be over 50. I turn around, my nerves tingling a bit. What I see doesn't do anything to calm me. Lady Blanos is a horrifying sight, and it takes all of my manners to keep my jaw from dropping.
blood healer, able to heal herself. I understand now what that means. She must be over 50, older than my mother, but her skin is smooth and shockingly tight over her bones.